Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week's episode of Enough About Me is brought to you by Milton's. Milton's, the goal of a great suit is to make you look great. And someone who doesn't normally look great looks great in a Milton's suit. And I know that from his trip to D.C. Am I wrong, Curtis?
I normally look like crap, but the great people at Milton's helped outfit me for our trip to the Trump White House when the Patriots visited in April, and I've gotten used to that suit several times since. It is the one thing I wear every time when I know people will say, you will look good.
Well, I've told you before, you do actually look good when you wear the suit.
It's the only time I've ever been complimented about my appearance has been at my trip to the White House, and the few times I've worn it since, and it was just... It's the easiest thing to do. You go in, you get fitted, they get it ready for you, and it's a great price.
They will help you choose the right suit with just the right fit. It could be by Hugo Boss, Ted Baker, or Michael Kors in a cool new blue or gray or a rich classic navy. And you'll get it at an unbeatable price. One suit starts at just $199.99, or get two with Milton's buy one, get one free suit sale starting at $299. At Milton's, you'll be as comfortable in our stores as you'll be in our clothes. South Shore Plaza, Braintree, and Chestnut Hill Square, Chestnut Hill. Milton's, the store for men.
So I guess it's part two of the Enough About Me with Jason Wolf. I am recording this on the balcony in Kennebunkport. I apologize if the crashing waves of the ocean annoy you. There's also cars going by, which isn't right. I would like to get rid of those cars. I'm working on changing the road so cars don't drive by my place now. 68 degrees here with a nice breeze, about 10 miles an hour. I stopped listening to Trenny and Mutt and Jerry show. It was not great. I mean, the whole week has not been great, obviously. but I'll be back Monday. And as I tweeted out the other day, I will be talking about everything, including why I was off the air last week. It was not an extended vacation, is what I would say. We'll get into specifics on Monday morning, right around 6 o'clock. I don't know how Wolfie would have handled this whole thing the last couple weeks. My guess is he would have handled it much the same. You know, we're in a partnership, and that's what Wolf would have said as well. My guess is I would have had the same sentence. That's just a guess, but that's kind of the way they went. That's the way these guys always are, and I understand that that's part of their business as well. I do enjoy reading and seeing all these tweets about all this speculation, and I love seeing the tweets that say that it's all orchestrated and fake. I saw the media critic of the Boston Globe say that 97% of our show is fake. He tweeted that yesterday. 97% of our show is fake. I asked him to give an example. Of course, he couldn't give one. And the reality, of course, is that our show is the least fake show on radio in Boston. The least fake. Because when we have a problem behind the scenes, we bring it up on the air. It's not orchestrated. You know, if I don't like Alex or Gary doesn't like somebody or Jerry's mad at somebody or Curtis, we talk about it on the air. Other shows don't. We do. I would say the other shows are fake because they live in pretend world where the red light goes on and they talk about, you know, what's going on with Aaron Judge's swing. Or, you know, what are they going to do about the third line? And just stuff that, you know, nobody talks about conversationally at all. It's total bullshit. But they go on there and they're safe and they get no complaints and they get, you know, ratings are okay. Just enough to keep a job. But we go on there and we fight and we disagree and we do what you do with your friends when you're talking to your friends. You argue. You fucking bullshit. You talk. You do what they do. You break each other's balls. You take cheap shots. You talk about stuff they don't want you to talk about. That's what reality is. That's, you see, fake is Dan Patrick. That's fake radio. That's bullshit radio. Mike and Mike, bullshit radio. Those guys right now don't like each other. You can tell if you watch it for 2 seconds. They can't stand each other, but they won't talk about it. Bullshit is, in my opinion, some of the stuff you see on Nessun, where they don't talk about the Eckersley situation. What Nesson should do is tell Dennis Eckersley and tell David Price, you're going to sit in a room, the two of you, we're going to put a camera on you, and you're going to talk for 15 minutes. But they won't do that because they don't. They just choose not to do it. They choose to stay away from interesting stuff. We don't. So again, examples of what's fake. You don't have one. I mean, I don't know. My parents are dead, I think. I don't think that was fake. Jerry's folks are. Curtis is an alcoholic. We are pissed at Reamer. Tanguay stormed out, and I saw people say it was a stunt at the time, and he was going to come back and be the full-time host of the show. Well, obviously, that was bullshit. I love that. So we decided one day with Tanguay, hey, Gary, you know what? We're going to say this about you, and you walk out for 6 months, cost yourself thousands of dollars, because it's good for the show. It's a bunch of fun. Wink, wink, nod, nod. I mean, are you a child? Do you really think that's how it works? No, it's not. We get mad at each other, and sometimes that blows over into reality. That's how a show should work. A show should not work like this. Hey, what do you think the Patriots should do about third down situations? Go to the break. Nobody talks to each other. Behind the scenes, motherfuck each other. And then go back on the air and do the same boring bullshit buffet again the next day. Fuck that. Those are the frauds. Those are the fakes. You could say, Minahan saying like it's, you know, but that's orchestrated too. No. Nope. I can tell you when I work with John and when I work with Jerry, we have never said before a show, you take this side, I take that side. It's just terrible radio. It comes across as fake. You're going to get exposed eventually anyway. The biggest story we've ever had is Deflategate, and all three of us agreed on it. I mean, that's why we brought these dummies on every day to fight with them. Do you think if we decided to orchestrate that one of us would have taken the Tanguay side or the Tomasi side, the dumb side? Of course. Now we would have fought, but we all agreed on it. It sucked. It was unfortunate. I'd much rather we disagree on things because that's good radio. Others don't agree with that. Mike and Mike don't disagree. Dan Patrick and his Danettes don't disagree. We disagree. We fight. Sometimes it gets ugly. Sometimes it gets personal. Sometimes it gets unprofessional. But people like that. People enjoy that. So we decide to do it. We talk like people talk when they're hanging out with each other. That, to me, is what you're supposed to do. I don't know. I could be wrong. And I'm not sure Jason Wolf agrees either. And I don't know if Wolf's a big fan of mine. I don't know. But decided to come on for the second part of the podcast. And we got into it. And Wolfie did a good job. I enjoyed having him on. We haven't talked a lot in the last 3 years since he left. But when I sat down with him, I was reminded of how smart he is about radio. You know, he's an adult. He understands the business. And he should be in the business. I guess he is, but you know what I mean. He should be a program director somewhere doing this. I enjoyed it. It's part two of the Enough About Me podcast with Jason Wolf. I will be back Monday morning at 6 o'clock. I will be solo on Monday. I don't know what the rest of the week looks like, but I'll be alone on Monday morning at 6 o'clock. And as I said, call in if you want. I'll answer anything you want. Everything is in play. I know that might sound fake, but you can ask whatever you want. I'll do my best to answer it. So I'm back Monday morning on the Kirk and Callahan show. But this is part two of Enough About Me with Jason Wolf.
Before we get to the other stuff, we'll get to what it always comes down to in this podcast is me. You know, ultimately, that's why it's why we're here.
Figures.
And I tell the story all the time. I would say it was 5 or 6 years ago we had a meeting. We would meet, I would say, semi-regularly in your office before I was full-time. Yes. Full-time on the air, I mean. I was working at the website and on the radio. Honestly, more than I met with Kevin or Joey after that in terms of just sort of talking about stuff, because I think now they feel like they can't talk to me about anything because I'm just going to say fuck you and walk away. So at that point, I was still I was still submissive at that point. But I always say, you did sit me down one time and say, I don't think you're going to be an everyday on-air personality. Do you remember saying that?
I don't. When did I say that?
I'm like you with the first day you worked here. I don't have the specific date. I didn't write it down when it happened, but it was before I was doing like weekends and stuff. I remember thinking, oh, you know, okay, that's going to be something, you know, that's fine. Yeah. But then when you guys picked Winter over me to do that, which was the right move, by the way, I always say, like, that role in there, I'm pointing the meters booth, I sucked at. I would have been a bad fit at that. Were you advocating for me to replace Winter when I assume Jerry or John said we got to get rid of this guy? Or was it just, let's just throw him in here, who cares? Just trying to do something quick?
Kirk, I wanted you to take the job from the beginning. You didn't want that role.
Because I would have sucked at it. I don't remember that. Is that true?
Hell yes, it was.
Really?
Yeah, and that's the way I remember it. Absolutely. I wanted you to be in that role. I had envisioned a growth for you that I'm not going to say ultimately would have led to where you are today, because I didn't see that coming. And it's kudos to you that you've been able to do what you've done so far.
So you're surprised I've had some success in this business?
No, I'm not surprised. I'm astonished, frankly. No, I'm kidding. I think that you're doing an excellent job. I mean, you figured out what it needs, the personality traits that are needed. But at that time, we were looking for a specific role.
Right, I couldn't do that.
You couldn't, so you chose not to do it.
No. I wasn't offered that job.
Sure you were.
No. That's not true. I was not offered that job.
I wanted you to have that job. You didn't want it.
You did not offer me that job.
Yes, I did.
You did not. So we should go back.
You want me
to
go pull the contract? Yes, I still have it.
Look at it. That was a few contracts ago.
A few. You probably don't remember that one.
No, that one I don't remember.
It might fit in your other pants.
I wouldn't say that. Is that really true?
Yes.
It's did I turn it down?
Yes. You didn't want to do it.
Presumptuous asshole. Really?
I don't think we talked money. I said, I want you to have the role. I think you can be good with those guys.
Right.
And you didn't want to do it for that particular role. By the time you got into the role, there was, I think I was only there for another maybe 4 months.
6 months maybe?
6 months
Whatever
tops.
It was. Yeah.
So, you know, I admittedly at that point wasn't giving you a lot of guidance, and I don't think you were listening to too many people other than yourself in terms of how you were going to make it work with the two of them.
Right.
And you sensed, rightly so, that you could become a real third voice and then ultimately grow yourself from there. And I think that's what happened.
Well, what I sensed from the start, too, was, and there's a sort of narrative that, well, we can get to it, that I pushed John out, and that's fine. But I sort of sensed...
You did, but that's all right.
Did not. We can get to that. But I sensed some tension between the two hosts anyway. Which, as you know, existed already at that point.
I think that's true.
I'm sure you've had many. You were in the middle of many battles between those two over the years. But I felt, I felt bad. Sorry, Jason. You know, what I felt bad for though, and I've said this before, was Winter. That was kind of a no-win situation for him, really.
Yeah,
like he was he's good. It's what he is, but what he is doesn't fit in with what John and Jerry do. You know,
it wasn't a good fit.
Right.
It was a mistake.
Yeah, but see, this doesn't happen enough in radio. I think sometimes you got to say, like, fuck it.
Well, we did.
That's what I'm saying. That's what you did. You said, fuck, it's not working.
Yeah.
Let's go on to whoever. And then I said, okay, I'll do it, but I don't want to sit in there. I want to sit in here. And ironically, the one who was more open to that at the start was John. John was far more open to that at the beginning than Jerry. Jerry wanted me in there and doing other stuff. He had this weird, one of these weird Jerry visions.
Well, because Meter's role, there were more facets to it than... I'm going to give you the scores every 20 minutes. I mean, they wanted him to do bits. They wanted him to do creativity and come up with additional content that was not going to be a regular part of the show.
Right.
And that wasn't necessarily your thing. Your thing is more being involved in the discussion, building the – advancing the dialogue, which you're good at. So I can understand why there was some discrepancy there. But, you know, again, we were a little bit too tunnel vision at that point and didn't see too far ahead when we should have, that Kevin, as good a broadcaster as he is, wasn't going to be able to add that additional element that both those guys wanted.
How would Jason Wolf have handled the Kirk Callahan and Dennis situation from, like, you know, as we came toward the end of it?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, listen, you like John. Obviously, you John have had a great, I guess, a great partnership together. We had a lot of success. You wrote something for, where'd you write?
Dirty Water Media.
We wrote about John. John had a great career. There's no question. So you're loyal to him. He's loyal to you. I get that. But I wonder, looking at that, how do you handle that?
I think I would have sat the three of you down way before it was obvious that it was becoming a factor.
Right.
And tried to have an open dialogue about who wanted what.
Right.
And I think what I might have heard was that John didn't want the same thing as he wanted from 2 years earlier. And I think he wanted to take it a little easy, which is okay. He was getting to the end of his career, and he had a tremendous career. But maybe he didn't want to work as hard.
Right.
And you're the young up-and-coming buck who's, you know, bull in a china shop, and you wanted to work hard, and you wanted to be aggressive. And I think that was a factor for him.
And you know how hard Jerry works, too. How
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The thing that people never understand about radio guys is they think they just work from 6 to 10 or 10 to 2 or whatever it is.
Some do, I guess.
Some probably do. But for the most part, the real good ones, they're thinking about it constantly.
All day.
They're thinking about it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for as long as they do it. And if you're not doing that, you're not being as prepared as you could be.
Right.
There was certainly too much tension, I think, on air for the three of you that some listeners probably really loved because they just wanted to hear the battles. But
right.
It was a little uncomfortable for others.
Yeah,
and
I
don't think it was healthy. I don't think it would, if I was sitting here, I don't think it would have been healthy to continue to advance a show forward. And certainly you got to the point where one of you is going to go.
Right.
And it wasn't going to be you.
I guess not. Yeah, I guess not. But John, no, you're right. John had a great career, and I haven't talked to him in forever, but, you know, I don't know. What do you think, when you look at both stations today, and again, I know you don't listen to it much, what is your take? What is your...
So the two stations are really defined by the morning shows. The personality of EEI is in large part based on what you guys do every day, and I think the same for them. And that's what keeps them on two separate tracks, even then, maybe to a little bit of a degree, because Felger and Maserati have done so well.
Right.
They are probably equal with Touch and Rich in terms of what drives that station. But if you listen from 10 o'clock on to both stations, you're hearing much more sports.
Right.
You're hearing much more not cookie-cutter tunnel vision, breaking it down type of stuff. But it's good sports talk with production and entertainment value.
Does that still work?
Not as a whole.
I guess Felger and Maz do it, and it works. Well, I mean, the ratings for both stations, we always say
my point is, Kirk, that whether I like or dislike political talk or whether anybody dislikes it or likes it, it's irrelevant. What happens is people get attached to certain personalities on the air. You guys have had a tremendous amount of success by being a lot of things to a lot of people, but mostly being true to yourselves.
Right.
And that's what's real about it. So if you're going off on a rant about something Jerry said as it relates to, could be related to Brady, could be related to Trump, could be related to Bill Cosby,
right.
Doesn't make any difference. People are compelled by that because they can appreciate the passion with which you discuss it. I think in an odd way, Trump fighting with the media as much as he has over the last 18 months to 2 years now, has seeped into radio to a certain degree.
That's probably true.
Because you have, it's okay to fight with the media.
Right.
Even if you're in the media.
Right. Right.
And you guys are making a career out of that right now. But there's nothing wrong with it. And so I would be so supportive of that at this point, because I know that's what works, and I wouldn't worry about, well, we're going to piss off this guy, or this guy's going to tell us to go pound sand. You got to take the good with the bad. And if you look at it as a whole, even though there may be the perception that there's a likability factor or less of it with your show than there is with Toucher and Rich, both shows are imminently, hugely successful.
Right. Well, I want the Jason Wolf program director coming in to criticize. What are the criticisms of Kirk and Callahan? That's what I want.
The criticisms of Kirk and Callahan.
Yeah, when Wolfie comes in.
Far too much Kirk.
That's true. When Wolfie comes in at 10:15 and sort of after the backslap, and then he starts getting into it. What's the issues?
I think that there are a lot of things that are excellent about the show.
No.
There's passion. There's energy.
No. I can handle it.
I'm getting to it. But there certainly is too much of the I don't care about sports. And I that sounds odd, but what I'm saying is sometimes when I listen to you guys discuss sports,
right,
I feel like you don't even give a shit about what you're talking about.
Not about all sports stories. Certainly.
But give me an example of what you're talking about.
One that I care about?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking around. Like, let's say – when we're talking about the Cavaliers and the Warriors are playing, as we're taping this, you're getting ready to play game five tonight, right? See, I know. I'm keeping up. I'm a sports fan. When we talk about Golden State versus, say, the Celtics, or where Golden State ranks historically, like, I can have a really passionate argument about that. I cannot have a passionate argument or conversation about Carson Smith coming back. Like, I'm just not built to do that. And I think it's better to say on the air, I'm not built to do that, than pretend like I'm built to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm saying that there are certain times where it sounds like no matter what you're talking about as it relates to
sports.
Sounds
like we just want to get to the next stuff.
It's just, let's move on to the next thing. Let's get back to the social issues of the day.
Or and our own show, little circle jerk.
Whatever it is. Right, I mean, to me, there's – and it's not so much that you're bringing in the other side of the political scene. I mean, honestly, I don't really care what Alex or Trenny or any of those people have to say about politics right. or any of that. I would mix it more with the passion about Golden State versus the Celtics versus left versus right on the political spectrum.
Right.
I mean, there may be a certain amount of people that are okay with that. I don't think it's necessary for what you do. And I frankly think you're just pigeonholing those guys into being the leftists that come on as opposed to letting them talk about their institutional knowledge if you think that they're good enough to do that.
I guess I think that's a legitimate argument. But I do think, you know, like you're saying, do you want other people to be in the mix? Because it's what we talked about before. Who are you bringing in? I mean, think of the people we've brought in. Trenny, Reamer was nobody. You know, Mutt was a guy who was doing nights and hadn't worked in middays. I mean, Tanguay we brought off from out of nowhere. Like, it's I don't know if there are four other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not saying that you need
you're
to bring anybody
in. You're
saying
use them in a different way. Like, use Alex Reamer's deep institutional knowledge of basketball and baseball?
I'm saying if you think he's qualified to talk about other subjects besides left versus right social issues, then yeah, I think you should talk to him.
I'm not sure he is.
Well, if he's not, then he's not. I mean,
well, you worked with him, right? No?
I worked with him very briefly.
On the Big Show Unfiltered?
Yes. I was never in the house for that.
You're never part of that? Kind of part of it? Not part
I
of
helped
it?
Him with a little bit of marketing. That's about it.
How long were you and Glenn? Did you and Glenn at any point not talk?
Stayed in touch.
No, I'm saying when he lost his job and he got fired, everything was fine. He understood.
We talked all the time.
Yeah, he understood that it wasn't. Because did you so when Glenn got fired, are you the one who said you're out?
Yeah.
Called him in his office or called him in your office and said you're done?
I did.
Was he shocked or did he have some idea that it was coming?
I don't know if he was shocked. I think he was. I think he handled it as professionally as he could handle it.
Well, it says a lot about the guy when you say, I trust you to have 3 days on the air. I mean, there's some guys who would you have done that for John?
I don't know.
Right.
I mean, think it would depend. Each situation is different. Look at Kirk. I said to, first of all, I insisted that I be the one to tell him.
Right.
When they decided that it was time we were going to move.
That after show, 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't want it any other way.
Right.
But I also said, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it the right way. We're going to let him have his time, and whatever criticism we get that comes with it, and there'll be a lot, we're just going to eat it and not worry about it because he had too long of a career and too much success and meant too much to the station to just tell him at 6 o'clock he's done and never hear from him again. I thought that would have been colossally unfair, and corporate agreed, and so that's why it was done the way it was done.
How about Dale? Was Dale just Dale did the show with that day? Me, I filled in for Hall.
Is that right?
Yeah, I remember we were walking back to the office, and you actually grabbed him, and I kind of was like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I left, and then read later that day he was gone. Was he completely stunned? I mean, I worked with him that day. I didn't get the sense of something.
Yeah,
he was
not happy.
Yeah.
let me leave it at that. He was not happy.
Yeah, and it's somebody you had known for a long time.
First guy I ever worked with.
Yeah. So that's got to be for you an odd. Like, I see it now to some extent with Joey. You know, I've known Joey for 9 or 10 years now. And it's just like eventually Joey will probably be the one who fires me. And it's going to be a weird experience for both of us, I would think.
Well,
no.
Again, it's not a fun scenario to have to go through any of that. But at the same time, we were trying to move in another direction, it was the wrong direction. And I'm glad, frankly, to see that all those guys are back. There was a lot more life left in that old lineup than I think people gave it credit for. And nothing proves that more than the fact that Dale and Holly are back. And even though there may be a large discrepancy in the ratings, they're still doing very well, much better than what was going on before them. And Glenn has revived that midday show. Now, as I understand it, I haven't seen the ratings in a while, but as I understand it, they're basically nip and tuck. You know, these guys will win 1 week, and Glenn and his guys will win another week. So
sounds like you've been talking to Glenn.
I have talked to him. But,
I know.
But I've talked to other people as well.
Right.
So
no, they're doing great.
I don't think he's...
No, they're doing very well.
And so you look at that, and other than a couple of other puzzle pieces that might be in different slots and one other personality... Christian Fourier, mm-hmm. It's all the same people.
Right. Well, it feels like that feels like the Big Show now to some extent.
Yeah, right, with two
permanent guys every day. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
All right. Who's the biggest asshole you ever worked with at EEI?
There were so many, Kirk.
Well, give me one. You said this guy's just an asshole.
See, I knew you were going to pin me down with one of these types of questions where I just have to throw somebody under the bus, and I'm trying to think, who should it be? You know, honestly, I don't think that there was anybody I didn't get along with. I mean, I had my share of disagreements with people. I think people respected me because I would at least tell them the truth, even if they didn't like it. But nobody came off like a complete ass and,
right.
and just was somebody I didn't want to work with.
Not Jeff Brown?
I think he was doing what...
he was told to
what
do.
He was put into a role to make some hard decisions. And he was not... asshole per se to me, but I think he didn't understand the way this market worked, and that made it challenging. The bigger challenge was that he felt it was going to help him if he let the Boston Globe report on everything that we did before we did it.
Right.
And that was a real challenge for me. I said as much to everybody at the time. I just felt like I was putting out fires constantly. Something would show up in the paper. I'd get a call from a talent. What's this? I don't even know about it because it's in the paper. That was hard. But, you know, again, everybody has their own philosophy as to how they want to go about doing what they think is going to be in the best interest of the station. And at that, I can assure you that that was not in the best interest of the station, particularly around the time that we were making the change with Glenn. Because that caught everybody completely off guard.
Totally.
And it's not as though the Globe wrote some big, you know, unbelievable piece. It's time to let Glenn go and, you know, bring in this new guy who's going to be the greatest thing ever. I don't remember reading that.
That did not exist. But do you think, you might agree with this, Wolfie. I do think that, like, I know some people read it, but there is no doubt that it's our little world when it comes to this media stuff. I mean, I read it. I know I get worked up about it, but like,
oh yeah,
I know
9 out of 10 people have no idea.
I always use my dad as an example. Unfortunately, my dad definitely doesn't read it now. But my dad until I started doing it. He didn't know. Like, he doesn't know who's replacing who. Like, if I said to him who's on midday at whatever, he'd say, "What? What are you talking about? Who's this guy?" Like, that is our own little circle jerk.
I totally agree with that. Yeah,
but that doesn't mean. But to your point, it doesn't mean that you get any less pissed off when you read something about it that you don't know about. You know, I remember reading that.
Hold on a second. Wait, I'm talking about when you're making really big, high-profile decisions. That's different. People paying attention to that.
Yeah. No, I get that.
If some little thing shows up in the paper that is you know, mind-numbing, doesn't matter, then it's just the internal sports media world of the people that pay attention. But for something like that, that had ramifications way beyond sports.
Right. You're talking advertising and also and all that stuff too. But I remember when I first started with Sean and Dre, maybe a month in, the Globe had written that they were looking at adding, you guys were looking at adding Mary Paletti, who was the first Quick Slants girl with Karin, to the show. And I remember thinking that makes absolutely, like, it's not possible if that makes sense.
All right, so you want to hear the story? Here's the story.
Yeah, well, I remember you told me after, but go ahead,
The story is that I called her up because I frankly thought she was good on that show.
Yeah, they had good chemistry. She just left the business, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I went and saw her, took her out for coffee, just to talk to her. I wasn't offering her a job. I wasn't even really thinking about it as a real possibility. But I took her out. We talked. We had a long conversation, and I liked her. Mm-hmm. I thought that she had some spunk. I thought that she had some knowledge. I thought she could play well off of the two guys, but I promised her that the conversation would stay just between us. And I came back, and of course I had to report to my general manager, this is what happened, and it was a good conversation. Let's see where this goes. No rush. We'll take our time. Plus, she had a contract that was coming up with contracts.
Right.
So if it got out, she didn't want anybody to know that she might be looking because she wasn't looking.
Right.
Well, when that showed up in the paper, that was not a good thing for her.
Right.
And, you know, that part of it really bothered me because I said we need to keep this under wraps.
Right.
And nobody else knew about it.
Right. Well, there you go. I'll let you go here in a couple minutes. One thing, what do you think is going to happen with this merger? I know you're into this.
I think that the department. Well, let me put it this way. First of all, if I'm here, mm-hmm. I think it's phenomenal. I would love to be in a position to have some role in dealing with both brands because they're so successful and so big at this point.
Right.
So when I say if I'm here, if I'm an internal Entercom person, I think it's a tremendous opportunity.
Okay.
I think the challenge is, are they going to be able to keep both of the sports stations? Yeah. I know that Entercom wants to. It certainly makes perfect sense that they would want to. I think that from the people that I have talked to, it's going to be a challenge. It's not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination that they'll get to. The Department of Justice says, I think it's public knowledge. I don't think I'm speaking out of school. Everybody knows that they're looking into it.
Yep.
And they're going to look under every rock and every tree branch and every piece of dirt to see if they can find a way that leaving the two entities intact under the same roof is going to make sense. Mm-hmm. I would not even venture a guess as to what they're going to do because they have so many different things that they're looking into in order to have them make that decision. But I would say that it's 99.9% not going to happen until the end of the year.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing too. Not that I know anything, but that's what people keep saying to me. How about my theory, my conspiracy theory, that John Henry is going to sweep in at the last second and buy WEEI?
Well, unless the commission changes its rules at some point where one entity can own radio, TV, and newspaper in the same market, which right
Sell
now
the
you
globe.
Can't.
Sell the Globe.
Sell the Globe.
Well, no, you're not buying it?
Well, I don't think so. He has interest in radio.
You know that.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, sure. They were going to buy part of WBOS before
The
last contract. Well, two contracts go now with Entercom. So he would certainly like to control that if he could. That wouldn't be good for you guys.
No, that would mean we'd be out of work. They would say you have to sit there. I think that I'm not even mocking these guys. I like them.
You become an expert on Carts and Smith's delivery.
Yeah,
I'll tell you
fast.
That.
I think they would say we would really like to use Tom Caron and Tim Wakefield in the morning. I think that's what they would do.
Right?
Yeah, right. I mean, and just say the ratings might not be great, but we have a couple of advertisers, no problem. We have the games. We're going to be the Red Sox station. You know, and Lou and whatever. But actually, you know what? Lou is too critical of the Red Sox. I think they would just go all 24 hours a day. I'm not sure if that would work. I mean,
it wouldn't, but it's not going to. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that the merger is going to happen. It's just a question of which stations are ultimately going to be divested. So, this market, I can tell you with complete confidence that this particular market, Boston, is at the very top of the list in terms of what the department's looking at. They're obviously looking at other markets because of some of the synergies that are in existence there, but they're definitely looking at Boston as the number one factor in terms of how they choose to have this thing go forward.
I get this question asked once in a while. You're better at answers than I am. If number one station in the market, we'll pick 2554, you can pick a lot of them, was country, number two was country, they would add a third country. If it was classic rock, they had a third classic rock. Right now it's sports by a lot, or one and two.
Yes.
Why not add a third sports station that, let's just say it's seventh or eighth in the market, but if you get lower priced salary guys, maybe you make a little bit of money off it.
There's certainly enough passion.
Right.
I mean, it would have to be
Do you
local.
Need a team?
Not necessarily.
No? It's more expensive, I know, than, you know, you're going to pay these guys a little more than you would pay a DJ for playing music all day. I understand that. Is that a factor? Or is it just not being able to find talent?
I mean, look, as we said from the early part of this conversation, the marquee talent, first of all, you got to pay for them.
Right.
Second of all, there are not so many of them out there. So if the third wheel, if somebody comes in and wants to be a third wheel and wants to do it with B and C talent versus A and B talent, can they make a go of it? Maybe.
Let's say they're going to Jason Wolf. They're going to give you the job. Here's your check. You're the new PD of the third sports station.
They can't
station.
Afford me.
Third sports station in town. You're going to go and grab a show, right? You're going to go see who's available and try and grab, one of three or four shows at the two stations? I mean, what would you look to
I don't
first?
Know. I mean, again, it depends on what their overall philosophy is. If they want to, if it's just going to be nuts and bolts, you can pick 1,000 guys to do that. If they want it to be personality driven.
Well, say they're doing that. So you go and you try and grab one of the two morning shows.
Maybe.
And then,
I mean, but I don't, a third wheel's not going to be able to afford one of the two morning shows.
Right.
And they probably wouldn't be able to afford one of the teams either.
Right.
So it would be a tough putt to try to do that. Now, if you had Comcast as an example, who's trying to build out this local lineup.
Right.
And let's say Comcast cut a deal with some other radio station and it was a simulcast or some version of a simulcast with content they're already producing.
I've heard something similar to that. There's rumors about that with them.
Oh, there are. Well, yeah. Okay. Right. So that might be a way that a third player could come into the market. I just think it's highly unlikely at this point that another individual owner would come in and try to build a third station against two that are just crushing it already. I think it would be a waste of money and time.
Would you want to be a program director full-time at a sports radio station again or no?
I had plenty of opportunities to do that.
Right, around the country, right?
Yeah.
You didn't want to move.
I didn't want to move. I had an offer in San Diego. I had a lot of interest at two different stations in Miami, Chicago, and it just wasn't the right situation for me and my family. Under the right circumstances, I mean, I would certainly never close the door. I mean, it's still a very big passion of mine. But it would have to be the right fit, and I would have to be right for them, and they would have to be right for me. And at this point, where I'm at in my life, it's not something I'm looking for actively, for sure, but I would answer the phone.
So you'd like to work with Kirk Minahan again? Is that what you're saying?
If I had the opportunity to work with Kirk Minahan, that might absolutely vault me to the top of my
We got along okay. Chart. People always think I'm not that hard to work with. We got along okay.
I thought you were going to be grilling me. This has been like
that's what I'm saying.
Cupcake.
I mean, you did lie about offering me the job, and obviously you're not.
I hardly lied.
I take responsibility for Salk, but that's okay. I mean, you know.
No, I'm taking responsibility.
I know. But I said, you can't even tell me who one asshole is that you've worked with. I know when we get off the air, you could list me 30 assholes that you worked with.
I really can't.
Oh, come on. I've worked with assholes.
Yeah, but that's because you think people are assholes.
What do you mean by that?
I like to see the good in people.
You do? I've never noticed that about you. When did you start doing that? About 3 years ago? 2 years ago?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the people that I worked with the closest.
Yeah.
Again, I felt like I had the respect because I would tell them the truth. Doesn't mean they liked everything I did. Doesn't mean they liked everything I said. Doesn't mean they liked me all the time.
Right.
But there was a professional respect, and that helped me be very successful in my career. And
do you find it humorous that Joe Zarbano is the program director of EEI right now?
The former intern?
Yes.
No, I don't.
You don't? I do. And he's my boss. I find it humorous.
You do?
Well, I mean, it's odd to see him in that position now. Because, you know,
does he wear a tie every day?
No, but he's the guy who, you know, he's the guy who sent the penis cake to Chicago. Remember a couple of years ago? And now all of a sudden, you know, God forbid you say, it's funny seeing the, you know, when you're the producer of a show versus when you're the program director, all of a sudden the stuff that was funny when you're a producer isn't so funny anymore.
You didn't think that was funny?
The penis cake thing? Well, he was a producer then. I'm saying, I don't think boss Joey Zarbano thinks it's too funny then.
Probably not.
Were you around for Aaron Andrews or no? You were gone by then, right?
I was gone.
Because we talked, I remember, during that. Right.
Yeah, I mean,
it was stupid. I mean, it was fucking stupid.
Those decisions have to be made quickly and decisively. And when you let it drag out, it becomes problematic.
It certainly does. It certainly does. All right, I'll let you go. You've been around here long enough.
I can't believe you didn't ask me about Portnoy.
Oh, shit. Oh, that means you want to talk about Portnoy. Fantastic. We can definitely do that. Excellent. Good job, Wolfie. So did you must
well,
have
you
heard,
were you were getting so lame here, you know, all this fluffiness. I thought you were
again, if you can't name one asshole that you've ever worked with in your life in the radio business, I think we're making
I've worked with plenty of assholes, but not at EEI necessarily.
So nobody who was ever at EEI was an asshole ever.
No.
Why are you lying to me? What are you doing?
I'm not lying.
Oh, Christ. Anyway.
I'll tell you what. You list 30 people, I'll tell you whether they were an asshole.
Kirk Minahan.
Yes.
Okay, that's fair. John Dennis, ever.
A mild asshole.
It'd be great.
But I like John. John was the greatest.
It'd be a great book to be written about Dino, you would say.
You know, I was debating whether or not to even do this podcast because I could have put more stuff in the book.
Are you writing a book?
I should.
Yes, you definitely
I have
should.
A lot of good stories.
You definitely should. It could be like, what's his face's book? Carter Allen's book, but for EEI. People would read that. That
It'd
would do
good.
Well.
I think people would.
Get to work on it.
I think
that.
I need a ghostwriter or
I'm sure you're literate,
my
really,
own.
But that's okay. You should probably get somebody who knows how
I
to write.
I was an English major. What are you talking
I'm
about?
I'm sure Rob Bradford write it. You guys get along so
no,
well.
No, I would never have Rob. Could somebody from EEI couldn't write it.
Okay. That must be outside. Although Carl Allen's book was pretty good, I thought.
I didn't read it.
The BCM one? Jesus, you're in the business. What the fuck? So did you hear Portnoy?
It was a good book.
Did you hear Portnoy and Glenn on our show?
I did.
Yes.
Not at the time, but after the fact.
Subsequently you heard it.
Yeah. Okay, so. Well, the funny thing, Kirk, is.
Who's right or wrong?
What's the question again? I forget what the...
The Ordway Portnoy... No, go ahead. What was funny? Go ahead. No, go ahead.
The funny thing was that I started getting texts and direct messages on Twitter while it was happening.
Yeah, you unfollowed me on Twitter, by the way.
I unfollowed you?
You unfollowed a lot of the EI people on Twitter.
I unfollowed everybody from both stations.
Yeah, why?
On purpose.
Why?
Because I don't need to deal with it day to day. I've got a different set of... circumstances I'm involved with now, so it's...
For Christ. Go ahead.
You know, it is what it is. But every now and then I do a little search and see
my feelings, but that's fine. I don't want to get into it.
Well, you unfollowed me, too.
Yeah, because you unfollowed me first. That's a power
move. Is that why?
Yes, I was going to block you. Go ahead.
You're going to block me?
So go ahead. So
I never block anybody, by the way.
You don't?
Say whatever you want.
Do you mute them?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
But you don't have to... Well...
Sticks and stones, Kirk. I mean,
you're in a different position than I am, Jason. All due respect. You're a little outside the game right now. You can do that.
You think, huh?
Yes. Anyway... So Portnoy. So Portnoy, Norway.
Yeah, so I thought it was funny that the prevailing theory was that became such a big story the day it actually happened. That's not true. It didn't become a story until at least a couple of days after.
Well, Dave made the story, right? You mean about Brady's kid's picture about Portnoy's reaction to EI?
No, about what he did.
Right. Oh, I get you.
It wasn't really that big a story that day. It became all drummed up because everybody was talking about it.
Right.
And I'll say two things about it. One is that he was given a raw deal, Portnoy,
by
the company, and I'm going to take the full blame for that.
Okay.
Because if we took a step back and realized the situation, while I thought what he did was completely over the line and wrong, posting naked pictures of
I agree with that.
Brady's son.
Yes.
The reality is that it wasn't really that big a deal. It wasn't this whole explosion, now we have to get the lawyers involved and legal and all that. If I had to do that over again, I would have had him in the next day to explain.
Well, that was always Jerry's problem. Jerry says you didn't let him back on. You said no more.
I didn't, because I was told that we're not going to put him on.
It's that wasn't your call, though, I'm saying.
No, it's not my call.
Again,
and I certainly didn't run into the studio that day and say, oh, we're not going to do this with Portnoy. That did not happen.
I only saw you do that once when I was working with Mutt and I was filling in for Lou one day. I said something about Jack Edwards. And I used the word ejaculate to describe, and you ran in the studio. You were all pissed off, which is unlike you. I think something else was going on. You took it out on me.
I was having a bad day.
I think that's what it was.
Could have been.
You were being an asshole, ironically, that day.
I might have
been.
You're
one of the assholes I worked with. I can name like 500 of them. You're on that list.
So, yeah, but I'm a professional asshole.
No, there's no doubt. So your contention is that the company screwed up in handling Portnoy, which I agree with. I mean, that seems like an easy
move. Yeah, again, I think there was, well, there was pressure from the Patriots. There was a lot of rumors and discussion going back and forth about what was or may happen from a legal perspective. Nothing happened.
Now, of course, Robert Kraft is buddies of Portnoy. They do videos together.
Yeah, best buddies.
Right.
I think he gave Portnoy a bunch of his shoes.
He did.
So it's all good stuff. But again, I think that it's not so much about what he did. It's about the role that he was playing.
Right.
At the time, I didn't think he was a great fit with John and Jerry because they sounded like a bunch of dirty old men talking to him because at the time his site was much more smoke show and all that stuff as opposed to now, which is much more lifestyle and it's very effective to reach a lot of different people. And clearly he has a huge following and credit to him. So I think some of those things get blown out of proportion and I feel badly that we didn't see through that a little bit and handle it in a more appropriate way. Because he would have been good to provide that form and allow him to have a back and forth, whether it was with Glenn or John and Jerry at the time. But it probably would have been with Glenn because they had the
right thing. Anything else? You seem like you had Portnoy in your pocket. Anything else I forgot to ask?
Well, I thought for sure that was the first thing you were going to talk to me.
Can't believe that's a bad job by me. How about Shepard?
What about him?
Well, how about the whole, he lost his mind, we brought him back. If Pete did what he did, And you're the program director. Is that a lifetime ban? When he goes on with Portnoy and says all those things, the station sucks, sinkingship.com, or do you bring him back? And then what he did on the air that day, which is scrubbed from history. You were there for that.
I was.
Right. I remember.
I would have never let him back.
So for you, Pete gets a lifetime ban.
Yeah, well, you can't use the station to air your own grievances. Now, to a little bit of his defense, I understand why he was upset, because he couldn't get a meeting and he felt like he had something to offer, and it was what it was. But that's not the way you handle it. That's completely unprofessional. And as much as I love Pete, that was not a thing I was going to tolerate.
Don't you get the sense, and I love Pete too, I know you do, it's always the same with Pete, though. It starts out great, and then he wants more, and then he wants more, and then he wants more. He's like a little kid. He gets all red, and then he just explodes. Like this thing down in Florida is going to end horribly, and, like, you know, he'll wind up somewhere else.
I hope
else
not.
And, oh, I don't either. I love Pete, but you know how it is. And then he'll be somewhere else, like, 3 months later. I'll say, this is great. And then they're like, oh, my God, we're doing this whole thing over again.
Yeah. Pete filled an excellent role
on the Big Show.
He was tremendous. And it's pretty funny when you think about it, because Glenn had two guys so diametrically opposite.
Right? It's true.
Grandy.
And they were both good.
But for what they did, outstanding.
Yeah, Grandy was kind of like the Breen of Imus, sort of, with
Glenn. Yeah, but better.
I would agree better. Why did Pete get fired the first time? Online
position
poker?
Elimination.
It was not online poker during the show?
It's not online poker. It was a position elimination.
Somebody else where you could have said to him, we're going to cut your salary by 40%, or you never had that conversation either?
I didn't. Well, that was not an option. That was
just gone
at the time. It was just, we're going to eliminate the position. And now all those positions are eliminated because you guys are doing all the updates yourself, right?
I don't do them. Ken Laird does them.
That's true. Well,
I don't do updates. That's
a little beneath you. Let's not.
Don't you think updates? I know it's sponsored, but, like, you know, I mean, they're going to do an update in 29 minutes here, and they're going to tell us that the Red Sox lost last night at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
I mean, yeah, I think they're pretty useless.
I mean, isn't that kind of? How about
it's not really any different than whatever your main subject is. I mean, you guys walk in here, you got a sheet of ideas you're going to go after,
right,
for topics. Most people probably know that those are the things you're going to talk about.
Yes.
So they're not necessarily going to learn anything. They're certainly not going to be informed because you told them that the Red Sox lost 8-3 last night. What they're going to listen for is what your opinion is about all that stuff. And so, yeah, the updates have a place, but they certainly don't need to be 3 times an hour or 2 times an hour.
Can I tell you the smartest thing you ever said to me? Would you like to know that as we wrap it up?
Sure.
And I'm looking at it. Does it still exist? If you know this, it's not on right now. This right here is the text machine, because I never, ever, ever, ever turn it on, because I don't care. It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
You said to me one time, we're in a meeting, you and I or something, you said if it was up to me, I would take the text machine and throw it out the window. I remember you said that.
I said that.
Yes, you said that. And I stand by that 3,000%. It does not, unless it's sponsored right now, which I forget about. If it is, it's great. But, like, it's only a distraction. Twitter is a distraction, but it's a necessary distraction. You just have to have it because shit's going on.
Yes.
But there is no reason for that thing. None.
Well, it allows you to stay more focused. The majority of the
to have
people,
it off, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
to
yeah,
not
yeah.
look at it.
Right.
It's the same thing, I guess. But either way, whatever you think is best, when I say you, I mean the show,
right,
is best to keep your focus at 100%. That's what you need. And if the texts aren't going to offer you anything, then I don't see any reason to look at them.
What's your take on calls?
I think that every great show is based on the personality of the hosts and the subject matter that they discuss. Everything else is a distant second. You don't need a lot of calls. Most callers only call to hear themselves talk, and less than 0.5% of all the people who listen.
Is that really
actually
true?
Call.
Yes. That's really true? Because I think the older hosts, sometimes I put Jerry in that category, feel like they need to see 3 or 4 calls, so they think people are listening. It's just, you know, don't
care.
I mean, I can tell, I know we have weeks, we get fewer calls than the other shows. We have weeks, we'll get a weekly and we'll look back and I'll think, I think we took like 12 calls that week and we did like a 14 or a 15. Subsequently, we could have full lines all week and do a 10. Like, I don't, there's no.
Yeah, but again, Kirk, it depends what you're talking about. If you're having a really good conversation about whether Brady should have been at the Tony Robbins thing,
right,
calls can be effective.
Yeah, somebody was
but
there.
If you're having a conversation based on how come Farrell didn't bunt with 2 outs in the 7th inning last night, you might not get as many people who are as interesting as other callers.
Am I right that these Red Sox callers are older and older?
Yeah. I think so. Baseball has a real challenge. I know there's a lot of talk. They're trying to speed up the game, and they've got to make it faster and do this and do that. They need to do more than that. It's really catering to much older people at this point. It's a great game. It's awesome to have the Red Sox. I mean, they were a terrific partner when I was here.
There you go. There's the old Wolfie right there.
You got to do it.
Intercom Wolfie.
But you got to have a reason to want to tune in, and you got to be able to utilize everything, all the resources that they're giving you. And it's tough with the way the game is. It's hard to watch. I mean, you guys talk about it all the time, and so does the other station, by the way. If you sit down and watch a hockey game that you know is going to be
2 hours, or
2 hours, 2 hours, 15 minutes versus a baseball game that could go 5 hours. Yeah. You have no idea.
Yeah. All right. I'll let you go. You can write the book. When you come back, you can come on again. At that point, you will thought of one asshole that you worked with in Intercom. I'm the thinker. That book will not sell a copy. So you better make one up soon enough. It's been a long time.
If I had to lie, I would lie, but I can't.
All right. That's it.
Sorry to disappoint you.
That's okay. I'm used to it. We'll see you again, Wolfie, down the line. Everything's good, though. Family's good. Job's good. Life's
Family's
good.
Family's good. Job's good. Life's good. Yep. Freshman. My daughter just completed her freshman year at Emerson. Very mm-hmm. exciting.
Excellent.
My other daughter is a freshman in high school and ready to be 25. So
come on by in Lexington anytime.
I'm a little shorter now than I used to be.
I don't think that's possible. Can I have Harry's booster seat back, please, for the car? Now the interview's over. Good. Excellent.
That was good.
Those jokes never get tired. Get tired of them. All right, Wolfie.
Tough skin, baby.
All right, I'll see you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.